It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here each and every day in Phoenix, Arizona, where it's very nice, very nice. And we have the studios filled up here at freedomsphoenix.com, freedoms with an S, phoenix.com. Janine and Kat are some of the activists that are here at Freedom's Phoenix on various issues. The main thing, they're into health. You know, they want, you hear sometimes the radio commercial for adult stem cell repair of your own body kind of thing. What a concept. They're going to start doing a podcast from here. So they're in learning, seeing all the buttons. Donna's guy came in, push buttons and so on, show them what can be done. Because, you know, that's what the studio was set up for. You know, the only reason really I do radio other than because, you know, like my kids say, I love to hear myself talk for hours a day. Not the there is a, it's really an inspiration for other people to do their own thing. Well, a lot of times they used a video studio and they used a radio studio for different things. But they'll and you know, of course, Jet has his show, The Revolution Continues. But I'm encouraging these guys, if we could have this thing used all the time, that'd be cool. Just don't go changing my settings. Don't push buttons you're not supposed to. Don't turn dials I don't want you to. So anyway, other than that, you know, go for it. Because that's the thing. I mean, there's a lot of information that we need to from all different perspectives. That's why a lot of the criticism I get on Freedom's Phoenix is it's too varied a perspective. And I'm like, I don't think there's enough. I don't mind you have far left and right guys going up there. They're going to have to go through the libertarian gauntlet, you know, and then, you know, they get the comments and so on. And then in the comment section, yeah, you get your trolls doing their thing every now and then. And I am I allowed not to care? You know, it's just, you know, they get made fun of by the other guys. So it's all good. It all works out. I've never known a flame war that lasted, you know, much longer than a week or two if you just let it go. And everybody gets to have their say. And I don't want to change that. And we, you know, there's still, for months, and I know it's been a long time, we've been working on the site in the background. What happened is that we quickly reach limits all the time. We have no idea how much traffic or power there is behind Freedom's Phoenix. I'll give you an example. We designed it initially with a lot of graphics. You know, that takes a little bit. It's not like a big giant deal. They're not large graphics. But, you know, it takes up load time and that kind of stuff. We have a lot of radio shows and such. We have a lot of things that we do that create a backlog in the ability to process it because there's a lot of back-end stuff, the way it's built and things. Well, we started this in 05. You know, we had no idea. Well, I did, but I mean, the webmasters, they're like, well, you know, you'll never need more than. I mean, we've upgraded, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. And I'm going, oh, yes, we will. Well, the traffic has gotten to the point where now we have to go to a totally different back-end software whiz-bang computer geek language stuff talking about. Well, we're almost online with the whole new site. And in addition to having more features and goodies, it's going to be a lot faster, and we'll raise our limit of what traffic we can do because it's been overwhelming. We'll say why when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone. and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And today, I wanted to make sure that you guys understood we have a lot of traffic on Freedom's Phoenix, and there's so much stuff going on, and there's a lot of new features coming up, and be patient. I'm telling you, we keep hitting our max all the time. I mean, boom, new max. New, we need more server, more. It's coming. We just added on a whole bunch 2 weeks ago and then went wham up, and we go, wow, we hit a limit already? So, and it's because of a lot of good shows, a lot of good stuff. Let me tell you one thing. We got Nick Bryant on, and I want to tell you about Nick. He's covering the issue that we've referenced in the past. I've done it before, especially when, Jeff Gannon Guckert from the White House Correspondents Pool kind of came out that he was a gay escort that was covering the news from inside the White House. He'd check in, but like the roaches, he didn't check out. So what we're, I'm just a gigolo everywhere I go. So what we're going to do is we're going to have an opportunity to learn about another scandal. That this is, it's amazing how these things can go unreported. And with the internet and talk shows like this, you can turn on the Wayback Machine and get information that was all over the press, and then it just stopped. I think it was Washington Times. Well, tell me, Nick, was it Washington Times where this broke in the main lamestream media?
Well, this particular scandal occurred. It's about the interstate pedophile network that flew kids.
No. We'll get to it. And I answer my
question.
But
yes, an aspect of it appeared in the Washington Times.
Now, this is what I wanted to talk about, Nick. Well, I'll get to you because I remember seeing this in Washington Times, front page. Here we got what was going on is there is a pedophile ring being run by, guys with influence trying to, get goods on congressmen and stuff. And guess what? You're voting this way. And you have Daddy Bush, director of the CIA, moving on up. He's president of the United States. Well, is there something you think he wouldn't do? How'd Richard Nixon, Tricky Dick, use the office? I mean, there is major, my goodness, stuff going on. So what we're going to do is we're going to be talking about a pedophile ring that was used in Washington for power and influence. Now, what I need you to do, Nick, is start us from the beginning instead of, coming out in the press, reporting, as you're writing your book. I need to know. One, go ahead and give us the title of the book and where they might find it.
The book is called The Franklin Scandal, A Story of Power Brokers, Child Abuse, and Betrayal.
And Franklin, why is it called Franklin Scandal? Because of the credit union?
Because the pedophile network used a credit union in Omaha, Nebraska as a front. And so that's why it was called The Franklin Scandal.
Okay, now was it always known as that, or you just called it that?
No, it's been known. This story has bounced around on the internet for a number of years, and it's always under the rubric of Franklin. And because there was a legislative committee in Nebraska that started to investigate this interstate pedophile network, and it was known as the Franklin Committee.
I remember that having something to do with some military bases. Does that ring a bell?
Well, Strategic Air Command is near Omaha, Nebraska, where Omaha, Nebraska was the epicenter of this pedophile network. And Strategic Air Command was near Omaha, Nebraska. Throughout the 7 years of my investigation, before writing the book, I had some indicators that there might be some kind of interrelationship between the pedophile network and Strategic Air Command. But I really couldn't I couldn't nail it solidly.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go back to what we know at the earliest time we knew it. They started this organization when? Do you know?
Well, I think this pedophile network was active through the majority of the 1980s. And I've interviewed several of the victims. And one of the victims I interviewed had been flown around in 1980, said he had been flown around in 1980. And several of the victims have been flown around in the certainly in the 1980s. And then one of the victims I talked to said that he'd been flown around as late as 1988. So if all the victims are being truthful, then the pedophile network operated from at least 1980 to 1988.
Okay, now how are these people recruited? How are they, you know, swept off the street, homeless, abandoned, sold, what?
A lot of the kids were runaways from dysfunctional families that just kind of fell through the cracks, and predators are very savvy on how to recruit these types of kids. Some of the kids, the first kid that actually came forward and made an official statement was she was in a very brutal foster home. There were like 8 foster kids in this home, and these foster parents were unbelievably sadistic to these kids. And actually, the first kid that came forward had been sexually abused by her foster parents starting at the age of 8. And then when she was 14, they pandered her out to this network. So she was the first kid to come forward, and she was from a foster home. But then and I found this very troubling in my research. The Boys Town kept coming up, and the Boys Town kids being enmeshed in this network came up, and I really didn't believe it at first.
Well,
but,
first, let's go ahead and define what Boys Town is.
Boys Town
is kind of a group,
is like an icon of the American experience. It's probably the most famous orphanage in the world. There was a movie from the 1930s that won the Academy Award, or was nominated for Academy Award, about Boys Town, and it was founded by Father Edward Flanagan. And Spencer Tracy portrayed Father Flanagan, and he was given the Academy Award. So it's a very, and other movies have followed about Boys Town. So, and Boys Town is one of America's favorite charities. And at this time, Boys Town outlets or branches are all over the United States.
I remember when I was a teenager and preteen, my father rode Gold Wing motorcycles and so on, and they had a big collection of tennis shoes that they would collect, and all of them would pull these little trailers and have all of these shoes go into Boys Town, and then they distribute them. So I remember them here in East Valley in Arizona, so I'm aware that they exist, and it's just like a group home for boys. And in this particular one, they had like quadruplexes out in this big field. You know, they had all these different homes. It was like a campus, and they had a family, you know, a husband and a wife. Usually that would be like the parents for each one of these cabins kind of thing. So I'm familiar with the concept. Now, Boys Town, why were they selected? It was a easy recruiting area. They had an in with one of the directors or something. But why them?
Well, in the early 80s, there's multiple accounts of the number two man at Boys Town. I think he was the number two man. He was the director of spiritual affairs. His name was Father James Kelly. He's been accused of molesting children from New York to Nebraska. I mean, it's really difficult to know how many kids he's molested. And he fit in the pattern of the Catholic Church moving pedophiles around. Several allegations came out about him molesting kids in New York State, and then ultimately he ended up in Boys Town, and he molested, according to multiple sources, many kids in Boys Town. It's difficult to know whether he was integral or not in this network acquiring Boys Town kids. I was never really able to nail that down, But what ultimately gave me some critical mass with Boys Town was there was a grand jury. Well, actually, there were three grand juries, which is kind of mind-boggling, that were used to cover this up. One in Washington, D.C., and two in Nebraska. But I was able to acquire, like, the sealed grand jury documentation from one of the grand juries. And it had a list of, like, 60 victims. There was a list of, like, 60 victims. And approximately 10 of those victims were Boys Town kids. And I found three of them, and they said that they were, in fact, victims. And then a fourth, who wasn't on the list, who was at Boys Town, said that he had been a victim, too, and flown around from coast to coast.
Nick Bryant is going to explain to us how they use and exploit young men, girls, boys, to what nefarious end. This is going to be an interesting show. You stay right there. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Nick Bryant. You know, Nick, I'm glad that somebody did this. This was a big story, a controversy, a conspiracy theory, whatever. It keeps rearing its head every now and then. This will come back. And there's a lot of questions I have of how it's related to today. But I want to go ahead and finish the story and get the background on this. Here you have a scandal that was being investigated that had some stipulations, as some funky stuff going on, and it primarily happened during the 80s, and it was during the Reagan administration and the Bush administration. You know, here you have a director of the CIA, formerly an ambassador to the United Nations, and VP and now president, and you had to think that maybe he knew something about it. And is he Ferd or Gennett? Well, we'll get to that. But one thing that I wanted to go ahead and finish the story, we have recruiting of young men, young boys and girls, and they're going, where do we have a steady supply? Well, on the streets, homeless, foster kids, abused, in care of the state, and a place called Boys Town. So here we have Catholic priests making their shuttle runs around the country and the world. We just had on Freedom's Phoenix yesterday that the Catholic Church had way more knowledge of this than they're letting on. And so now I'm looking at we're recruiting, building up a stable here, little stable boys. And go ahead and pick up where we left off. They're recruiting them from Boys Town in Omaha, Nebraska.
Well, that was, many, many facets of this story were very shocking to me. But when I did acquire that sealed grand jury documentation and saw that list of 60 victims and saw that 10 of them were former Boys Town children, I was a little shocked. But then when I found them, I did find some of the Boys Town kids, and they refused to talk to me. They seemed very frightened. But then I did find three Boys Town students on that list that did talk to me. And they said that they were victims, and they did discuss this network. And then there was a fourth victim that I found who was at Boys Town. And he said that he had also been recruited and flown from coast to coast, starting at the age of, approximately 12 years old to 15. And victims that had come forward that weren't Boys Town students had said that Boys Town students were involved. So there's a lot of corroboration.
But how do they come forward? How did that happen? You got an investigation that was done by whom?
Well, the thing is, the first kid that came forward in 1986, and she was a 16-year-old girl. And she had been in this, I talked about her, I referenced her briefly. She had been in a foster care home, and it was a really brutal foster care home. There were eight kids in that foster care home. And these kids were heavily exploited. They were beaten, they were starved, and this one girl had been sexually molested since she was like 8 or 9 years old. And then when she was 14 years old, she was pandered out to this network, and she was flown to Chicago and also to New York to, like, pedophilic orgies. And eventually, I mean, I've got all the social service documentation, or much of the social service documentation concerning that foster care house, and it's really mind-boggling what went on in that house. And just it was a veritable house of horrors, which the authorities knew about, and no one, they just let it go on and on and on forever. And finally, a number of the kids were taken out of that foster care house. But this was after there had been many, many, many incidents of child abuse. And the parents, the foster parents, were never charged with any crimes against children, which I find to be kind of mind-boggling.
Well,
but
I mean,
anyway,
was there protection that they had? Was there something?
Yes,
involved?
I believe that they were being protected, and people that went to bat for these foster care kids found themselves taking a lot of heat. And actually, one social service worker went to bat. She had a real bad feeling about this foster care home, and she was digging into it, and I've got documentation that where she said that she was actually told by the FBI to lay off this foster care home, by the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
I'm so shocked. Okay, so they have a steady supply of young boys and girls to fulfill whatever demand they had for the service, and who are they? I mean, who did you find out?
There were two pimps, primary pimps. The first pimp was Lawrence King Jr. of Omaha, Nebraska, who was also the manager of the Franklin Credit Federal Union. And the D.C. pimp was Craig Spence, who was, and they were both very high-ranking members of the GOP. They were high-ranking members of the Republican Party. And actually, Lawrence King Jr. even sang the national anthem at the opening of the 1984 GOP convention.
Oh, so we're high in the GOP. Well, I'm so not shocked. Well, we're going to go ahead and get some more information from Nick Bryant on the Franklin scandals. And I, you know, been wanting to do this. I'm glad somebody has done the research on that, because I'm just not inclined, you know. But I knew this story was out there, and I'm so glad we had an opportunity to get to the bottom of the story. We'll be right back with Nick Bryant in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Again, here and Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day from Phoenix, Arizona's lovely Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com studios. I want to make sure you know we got Nick Bryant on, the Franklin scandals, you know, a powerful new book that unveils the secrets of sex and pedophilia amongst Washington, D.C.'s privileged, making this the most suppressed crime story in American history, according to the author. Well, you know, it's hard to argue. I mean, dang. And this has been floating around. This is not like a secret. It's certainly not like it's a lot of the facts aren't stipulated to by everybody involved with court documents, investigations and stuff. I mean, it's not like it, you know, didn't happen. But we're going to find out, you know, a lot of the times I'm more curious as to why certain stories are not reported, why certain people are left out going free, why certain people are not prosecuted for certain things. It's because they can do whatever they want. Well, Nick, so pick it up where we left off. We got, you know, this young woman decides to, you know, spill the beans. She's been molested since she's 8 years old. She's, you know, from 14 to 16, they're flying around, you know, providing service for You know, I would say, who is she really working for? I mean, are the pimps kind of contracted out by these guys, or is there an overall GOP servicing the bad guys, or we just want to make sure we got bad guys in power that we got videotape on? I mean, what was really going on?
Well, she named Lawrence King Jr. as the primary pimp that put it all together, that got the kids and got them on the flights and accompanied them on the flights and put together the parties. And she came forward in 1986 and told her story to social service personnel, and nothing happened. And then eventually, it was kind of a lower-ranking social service personnel. But eventually, these allegations bubbled up to higher-ranking social services personnel. So ultimately, they reached the apex on the social services totem pole, where people at the very top of Nebraska social services became aware of this pedophile network, because there were, in addition to the first, and this was in 1988, because in addition to this kid, other kids had come forward too after her, and said basically the same thing and named some of the same people. So these high-ranking social services personnel alerted both state and federal law enforcement that there was this interstate pedophile network, and its epicenter was Omaha, Nebraska. And you want to know what happened?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Why, though? I mean, and people that would report this, I'm sure that they were going, what the heck is going on? And when they asked somebody, they said, let me tell you what's going on. Your life will be destroyed. That's what's going on. Shut up.
No, they were just completely ignored. I mean, completely ignored.
So they never followed up with it? Nobody came to them to say, shut up? I mean, somebody had to do
just,
something.
They were just completely ignored. Law enforcement said that they had investigated it, and law enforcement later came out and said that they investigated it, and that the allegations had no substance. But really, only one kid had been interviewed once, and by law enforcement. And the first kid that had come forward had never been interviewed. So ultimately, what happened was in 1988, the Franklin Federal Credit Union got raided by federal law enforcement, and it was discovered that Lawrence King Jr. had embezzled $40 million from the Franklin Credit Union. But these allegations had still been suppressed. So the Nebraska state senators formed a subcommittee to look into the embezzlement. They had no idea that this Franklin Credit Union was connected to this larger interstate pedophile network. They because actually everything had been so suppressed by law enforcement. But the social services employees went to these senators and said, there's $40 million missing, but we have evidence of far greater crimes, crimes against children. So they testified before this Senate subcommittee that was looking into the embezzlement of the $40 million, and they talked about the kids that had come forward to them, and the documentation that they had that said that Lawrence King Jr. of Omaha was running this nationwide pedophile network. So then the senators started investigating the crimes against children as well as the embezzlement crimes, and they quickly found out that both state and federal law enforcement had a lot of documentation concerning this, these crimes, and that the Omaha Police Department had an officer that was investigating these crimes, and for some inexplicable reason, he only interviewed one of the victims once. And so the legislative committee hired an investigator, and he told him to investigate these child abuse allegations, because the state senators of the subcommittee had come to the conclusion that although both state and federal law enforcement had a lot of evidence concerning this pedophile network, that they had done next to nothing to expose this network and the child abuse.
Well, I remember this. I think there was a senator that did champion this in the 90s, wasn't there?
He was a former Nebraska state senator. His name was John DeCamp, and he was the first one. He published, it was a self-published book about the Franklin scandal, and it was the Franklin cover-up. And people read it. It kind of became kind of like an underground cult classic. And then a lot of that book ended up being bounced around the internet. And I came much later. I came like 10 years later to this story, about 2002.
Well, let's go ahead and focus on, they do the investigation. They find enough evidence that, you know, somebody, you know, should have to stay after school. But did anybody get convicted?
Well, what happened was this subcommittee found victims, and the victims that had come forward previously had been, once the subcommittee formed, the FBI started its reign of terror on the victims. And the victims that had previously come forward, the FBI brutalized. And if you're a kid that's been sexually abused and in often cases there were drugs involved, I mean, because the people that ran the network provided these kids with drugs. And, I mean, that was like the carrot, one of the carrots. Drugs and money were the carrots and that got the kids. And then threats, of course. But the subcommittee's investigator found other kids, and he videotaped them just to make sure that papers couldn't be lost. I mean, he made videotapes of his of the victims that he interviewed. He ultimately videotaped four victims. So at this point, you've got six victims coming forward. And those four victims that he videotaped were then also subjected to the FBI's reign of terror. And the FBI, and I've got, like, because of the Steele grand jury documentation, I've got, like, a lot of the FBI documentation. And the FBI just subjected these kids to unbelievable pressure to recant, and they did. Two of the kids did, and because they were very frightened. And but then there were two kids that refused to recant, and then what ultimately happened was this subcommittee was really pushing very hard for an investigation, and there were two grand juries in Nebraska. There was a state grand jury and a federal grand jury that were convened to look at these child abuse allegations. And they both declared that there were no child abuse allegations, that Lawrence King Jr. had never abused a child or pandered a child. And I've got the testimony from one of those grand juries, the sealed testimony, and in my book I show what a travesty and miscarriage of justice that particular grand jury was. And then the federal grand jury was equally a travesty of justice. So instead of, and all these kids named similar perpetrators, but none of the perpetrators were indicted. Instead, the kids that didn't recant their abuse were indicted for perjury.
Hmm.
So the victims ultimately became the perpetrators here.
Okay, so we have investigation, we blame the children, we cover it up, we, you know, pay no attention to man behind the curtain. Now, what happened that you were able to determine that they were doing with these children and why? I mean, they were being served out to whom?
Well, I've acquired about, because of the sealed grand jury documentation, I've acquired about 200 of the flight receipts. And the vast majority of, although the kids that I've talked to were flown from coast to coast and everywhere in between, the majority of these flight receipts go to Washington, D.C. A lot of these kids were flown to Washington, D.C. to be used as basically sexual toys by some of our government's elite politicians.
Well, have they admitted anything? Anybody been convicted? Has there been any corroboration of this? Has there been any blackmail attempts that these were used? I could see this be a powerful tool for someone wanting to, you know, just get whatever they wanted from the government, you know? So, I mean, and the cover comes from where? I mean, is it coming from
the cover-up came from the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice was the puppeteer in this cover-up, and very upper echelon members of the Department of Justice. One of the individuals who was affiliated with the ring, not a victim, but one of the individuals who was affiliated with the ring, told me of a high-ranking individual in the Department of Justice who was a pedophile, who was actually being supplied with adolescent boys by this particular ring. And so you had the Department of Justice basically being the quarterback of the cover-up, and it was the FBI that was doing the dirty work in Nebraska, getting the kids to shut up, and then it was the Secret Service that was doing the dirty work in D.C. to keep it the toothpaste in the tube. So ultimately, you have three law enforcement entities with a tremendous amount of power. You've got the
Well, I remember being reported that these kids were being sent to the White House.
Well, the pedophilic pimp in Washington, D.C., his name was Craig Spence. He lived in a large Victorian home in a very upscale part of D.C. Yes, he was taking kids, he was taking underage prostitutes on midnight tours of the White House and other types of people. I mean, there's at least four of these midnight White House tours that I'm aware of, but there was probably more.
Wow. And, I mean, to what end? Just to satisfy the perversion of individuals, or was there an attempt to use it for blackmail?
Well, Craig Spence's home was wired for blackmail, audiovisual blackmail. And a lot of the pedophilic parties and sex and drug parties would occur at his home. And power brokers would come from all over. Now, I'll give you the type of people that ended up at Spence's home. I'm not saying that all of them are pedophiles, but I'll just I can give you, like, there were really noted journalists that went to parties at Craig Spence's place, like Eric Severide, Ted Koppel, William Sapphire. There were ambassadors like Robert Newman and James Lilly. There were former attorney generals like Elliot Richardson and John Dean. William Casey, the head of the CIA, was fond of going to parties at this house, as was Ray Klein, the former deputy director of intelligence for the CIA. There were a number of high-ranking military people that went to parties at this house. And then there were senators like John Glenn and Frank Murkowski who went to parties at this house. So basically, the elite of Washington, D.C. would go to parties at this house. And I'm not saying that everyone that went there is compromised, but this is how it went. It would start out as like a kind of your average Washington, D.C. Party where there would be very powerful, influential people there, just drinking, like a cocktail party, having a good time, imbibing alcohol. There would always be a steady flow of alcohol. And then at some point in the night, it could be 11, it could be 11:30, maybe it could even be 10:30, something inappropriate would happen, like somebody would break out some cocaine, or somebody would fire up a joint, or there would be some kind of explicit, overt sexual act that would occur. And then the people that were spooked by that would leave, but then the people that, and these people had been very lubricated by alcohol throughout the course of the night, the people that were enticed by that would stay. And if they stayed, they would be provided with whatever they wanted. They would be provided with any drug they wanted. If they wanted children, they'd be provided with children. And if they wanted, like, young men in their 20s, they'd be provided with young men in their 20s. If they wanted young women in their 20s, they'd be provided with young women in their 20s. Whatever you wanted, you would be provided with.
Okay, to what end? I mean, is it just, you know, I want to make sure you're loved up so you love me? Or is it they blackmailed him? Was there...
No, this house was wired for audiovisual blackmail.
Well, okay, when we come back, we're going into break, but when we come back, I'm very interested in the blackmail for what? You know, there is something that they wanted, There's something, and it's power, money, easy answers. But I'm if we knew who's behind it and how they benefited, kind of get the motivations of how this made it to the highest levels of government in Washington, D.C. We'll be right back with Nick Bryant. The Franklin scandals on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We have Nick Bryant on, author of The Franklin Scandal, a story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal. Well, that's it. You know, let's get to the part. You know, there in Washington, we have lots and lots of people on tape. Have any of those tapes ever made it out to the public?
No, none of the blackmail pictures have ever made it to the public, and I've tried to acquire them, but I didn't have much success. And
well, how are they actually used? I mean, do you have any ties between votes?
Yes, I believe. I mean, like the individual in the Department of Justice who helped cover up this scandal. He also was who someone in the ring told me was being provided with adolescent boys. He was also pretty instrumental in covering up Iran-Contra, making sure that documents that had been that the prosecutor of Iran-Contra was Lawrence Walsh, and he requested a number of documents, and this individual played an integral role in putting the kibosh on those documents coming out so Iran-Contra could be properly prosecuted. So the thing about it is,
define properly prosecuted.
well, no one really in Iran-Contra was ever convicted or sentenced. Well, I mean, they were all eventually pardoned by George Herbert Walker Bush anyway. But Lawrence Walsh said that there was the prosecutor of Iran-Contra said that there was I think he used the term invisible government within the government. And he felt that these documents that he was trying to acquire would prove that. But this individual prevented him from acquiring those documents. And if you compromise someone, if you compromise someone with a child, or you compromise, I mean, extramarital affairs have sunk many politicians. John Edwards and Elliot Spitzer comes to mind. I mean, a senator or a high-ranking person in the media or a high-ranking person in any administration has a tremendous amount of power. And if you have pictures of them engaged in illicit sexual activity...
No. I can see the power. You know, this is... And we have just a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to, you know, what has been your final summation of this entire event? Are we going to find? Is this all we're ever going to find out? Do we need to be concerned about it continuing? Do we need to be concerned about how these things? Is it over? Is that the media that's at fault? I mean, you know,
well, the media is at fault by trumpeting the government's line that there was no pedophile network, there was no child abuse. So you had CBS, the New York Times, Washington Post played an integral role. GQ magazine did a really proactive job on shredding the Senate subcommittee. And I've heard of other power broker pedophile networks before the Franklin Network and then after the Franklin Network, and they've never been stopped. I mean, it's never... Wherever there's a demand, there's going to be a supply.
Well,
I
is there an unusual demand in seats of power? Is that a way? You know, it's one thing that I found interesting. Another book, they're dealing with foreign government dignitaries and such, and they encouraged the elevation and rank and elected office and so on of just these types of people because they felt they could control them more.
Oh, absolutely. There have, since I've been working on the Franklin scandal, there have been power broker pedophile networks exposed in several countries, Mexico, Venezuela, Belgium, Portugal, and England. So, I mean, it's something that is with us, and the powerful people seem to be, have an insatiable demand for sexual.
The Franklin Scandals, Nick Bryant. Nick, we may have you back, man.